Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is Fired Up California. We are a fairly new show, but we're already making an impression. I want to thank everybody who's been watching and liking our videos. And before I go on, though, I want to introduce my co-host, Mr. Tyler Collins. Tyler, so I understand it was a big weekend.
It was a big weekend. It was both mine and my wife's birthday, but mostly my wife's birthday. You know how that goes.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know it was your birthday. So you guys follow the same date or just the same week?
It's about 2 days different. So hers is the 8th and mine's the 10th. And we're the same age for about 2 days.
Ah, there you go. There you go. Wow, I don't celebrate birthdays anymore. And women, once they pass 29, that's their stop dead day. But we got a great show tonight for the audience. You know, we've talked a lot, and tonight we're going to talk about the Latino uprising. And before y'all go, hey, look at that white race. Why are you saying I say like that? Go screw yourselves. I am born and bred. Yeah, my family runs the gamut from white to black to white, rich to poor, dirt poor, from straight to gay. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about Newsom getting into the podcasting business. Dirty little secret. He's been in it for a while, actually. And we also got Karen Bass deleting Texas. What is that woman hiding? And why is she deleting? Well, there's a recall Karen Bass that is starting to happen. And then we're going to have our every week, which I think will eventually become a popular take, is our Cali Blitz, which is our own form of a lightning round. So, Mr. Tyler, are you ready to get into this?
I'm ready to get fired up.
There you go. Yeah, let's have a scorching show. Let's not get into the what do they call those when you keep using words like that?
I don't know, overusage. We got to think of some more synonyms here.
But actually, our first topic, people. Latino voters reshape California politics from Democrat loyalty to GOP pragmatism. I always go back and forth. I like to source people, so I think it's fair when there weren't a lot of articles. So usually after 4 or 5, it's public domain, so I don't really source people. But this one here, I got a lot of information from Mike Madrid, which is a GOP operative name, and Gustavo Arellano. And then I also researched it myself. So what's happening is the Latinos are shaking California up in the wrong way if you're Democrat. We are leaning right, and we're flexing our political muscle. The only thing we haven't overcome yet, Tyler, is voter fraud. But Beverly Hills went for Trump in 2020. Woo, the rich Latinos. Okay, no secret there. And Mike Madrid pointed that out. And his own family jumped on the Trump train, and he's a GOP operative in 2024. Madrid was Beverly Hills, and Arellano was his family jumping on the Trump train. And it's loud enough that it's starting to make an impact. So Madrid and Arellano, these are both LA Times columnists, or the op-ed with Madrid. They're calling out what's happening with Latinos and how the Democrats are treating them. And then you also, Tyler, have State Senator Suzette Martinez Valladares and Assembly Member Kate Sanchez. And they're stepping up with a California Hispanic Legislative Caucus. And this goes back all the way to Madrid's 1998 hustle. He was a press secretary when 4 Latino Republicans broke through. And now there are 9. So that's the introduction here. I wanted to go back in history here. What year were you born, Tyler?
93.
So. Okay. So when you were 1 year old and not quite getting into politics, there was a proposition called 187. Now, 187 did not want to give money to illegals and social services and things like that. And that was seen as xenophobic. But you know what? The majority of Californians passed that, including a majority of Latinos. It was overturned by the California Supreme Court, and the legislative branch was allowed to do everything they've done. Fast forward to where we are now. Back then, we predicted this. I was still a fairly new California resident, and I don't remember if I voted at that point for something like that. But I would have obviously been for it. Why? Because what's happened since then, I saw. Why? I saw two dictators of Panama. Modern days, people have seen Venezuela. You know, when you become, when you siphon off the government, you eventually deplete the government and you get a caste system, the haves and have-nots, and everything bad we've seen in California, education. You know, it becomes an authoritarian state, or we have become, and they've kept the money lines through these social services flowing, and now we're broke. They accuse us of being xenophobic. I kind of view it as we saw the future. Looking back at this now, we are where we voted for this 187 because we did not want to be in the state we are today. What do you think of Prop 187 in terms of how it aligns to today?
Yeah, you talk about the different crises that California is going through in terms of financial struggles to support all these services. Just look, $50 million, the anti-Trump fund, and this is all about defending illegal immigrants. I think it almost seems like 1994's 187 was the last time you had something successful, like a vote like this, that actually was trying to curb spending on illegal immigrants. And ever since then, it seems like everything has just been siphoning more and more money to people who are essentially going to be, you know, they're not even U.S. citizens. Why are we spending money on them?
Right. And the reason this worked is because the Latinos jumped on. And then anybody who wasn't Latino or Anglo or Black or Asian, whatever, if you criticize, hey, how are we going to – this money's going one way. We're getting nothing in return. And you're xenophobic. You're racist. You're this. You're that. And again, it kept going until right around 2016. You started to see a change. And again, that's why you have four – Republican Latinos in state legislature to 9. And there should be more, but I think that's a whole different podcast and the failures of the CAGOP. So we are seeing a rightward turn. Look, there are GOP gains made in 2020, and it was Trump who won over the Latino heavy regions. He won over Central Valley, LA County cities in certain areas. And it's a trend that grew in 2024. In certain areas, he moved the bar from 5 to 10 points. Now, granted, Democrat dominance was 15, 20, 30 points, but he moved the bar over. Trump was winning the working class that Democrats abandoned.
Which is an interesting thing because it goes against the Democrat narrative that they see themselves as the white saviors protecting the poor, defenseless immigrants. When Kamala ran in 24, the most stable voting block for Kamala was white suburban women. And so the people who could pat themselves on the back that they were going to be saving these poor, defenseless immigrants. And the immigrants, or the new immigrant communities who just became U.S. citizens, especially in working class areas, these are the ones who became new Trump voters, which totally flips this Democrat narrative on its head.
Not enough yet, but it does. You're right. It does.
But that margin is part of what gave Trump the victory. It was that flip of a certain number of voters.
Oh,
they pushed him over.
Yes. I thought you were talking about California. It's not enough yet.
No.
You're right. And on a side note, as a child here in these United States of America, the greatest country in the world, I saw the white suburban female woman and how they treated my mother. And it's not that they did not want to help, but they wanted to help on their terms. You have to do this. You have to do this. Yeah. It wasn't about finding out who my mother was. It was dictating to her, this is how you're going to do it. And I didn't affect me at all until I got older. Then I realized, looking back, I realized, wow, y'all some white suit. It's a savior complex. You hit it right on the head with that. You know, and you're right. Trump's Latino support hit 35% in 2020 and grew in 2024. And on a national scale, as you were talking, Texas and Florida and California, like I said, when I said not enough, it's because California is lagging. But I believe. This is me, not Tyler. I believe it's lagging because of voter fraud. There's too many times that Republicans leading by a wide margin, and 6 weeks later, the Democrats eking out a win. Yeah, it's just, you know, and they don't want
to. We saw this as local as the Oceanside mayor's race with Ryan Keim getting beaten only by a few hundred votes by Esther Sanchez And it's all these votes coming in after November 5th.
Right. And as Joe Rogan, if y'all hate Joe Rogan, hey, Joe Rogan's the man. And for you entrepreneurs, I had a heated discussion with my partner about this. And finally, he's not Joe Rogan fan. I was like, stop. Joe Rogan is a successful actor, a successful comedian, a successful podcaster. And in all three of those, what's the one thing you can tie them in? They're all businesses that he succeeded in. So whether you like him or not, the man is successful at what he does, you know. And, oh, my gosh, I lost my train of thought there. He said about what did he say? Oh, I feel like an idiot. Hold on one second.
We went down a tangent. We went too far, William. We got to weave back. Okay, so we're talking about the Hispanic Legislative Caucus riding this wave.
Right. But it had to do with Trump and the rightward shift and
Prop 187.
Yeah. Okay, it doesn't matter here. It doesn't. Oh, I'm sorry. This is what he said. He said, look, New York and California are two blue states which have said it is illegal to show your voter ID. The only reason a state will do that is for one reason: to cheat. And actually, that's true, because you talk to any Latino, Black, any minority, they're going to tell you, yeah, I have to show my ID here. Yeah, I got it right here. They make every excuse as to why there shouldn't be any voter ID, because they want to cheat. All right. So
it's like, it's something so stupid that only a university professor could believe it, that having to show ID is racist.
I know. Yeah. I don't see them arguing about not. I don't see one Democrat saying, hey, all you people there in the airport line, y'all don't need to show your ID. Just come on. You don't even need to go through TSA. Yeah, not one. So, Tyler, can the CAGOP take advantage of this Latino rightward swing?
I think we have to. If we want to win back areas in San Diego County and different cities, we're going to have to.
There's a difference between have to. We have to do a lot of things in life, but can we do it? Is that does CAGOP have the fortitude to be able to do that? Because that's a long-term plan. And it seems like today's society, we live in a short-term game.
That's true. Everything is a short timeline. It's all about the next cycle. It's gone from where is the long-term 10, 20-year plan? I have hopes that they're going to be able to take this wave and incorporate different groups into the party and take them under the big tent. But we'll see.
Yeah. So I want to go a little bit more quicker here. I bogged this down and I apologize. So real quick, first generations, I'm a first generation. My parents technically aren't immigrants because my dad's Puerto Rican. You know, so he was able to go back and forth on the island, and my mom married him. So, but I'm technically what you call a first generation. So I grew up speaking Spanglish. My nieces and nephews, they don't even know Spanish. So that makes it unique. What ties Latinos together are our family and where we are from. But we know and understand this. So that doesn't drive us. That's part of our culture we're proud of. But what drives us is basic economy. Whereas, and this is where Democrats have failed. They thought we were a secondary Black, meaning what drives Blacks together is your skin color, is your skin tone, it's your Black. That's what combines a lot of Black Americans. And what saddens me is I do know some Black Americans. They'd love to know, are they Nigerian? Are they this part, that part? Even if you do a genetic test, it may tell you what region you're from, but you don't know who your family is, you know, stuff like that. So I think that's a key separation in the Democrats' failure. So, and the fact that by this third generation, we're not speaking Spanish, that means we're more American than we are Latino. What brings us together as Latinos is just the politics. Yeah, I'm Latino. I'm proud of this. But at the end of the day, yeah, I'm Latino. What's that? How much is that going to cost? Oh, hell no. You know? These are my thoughts. But any thoughts on how I see it? Am I looking at this wrong? And granted, I'm not trying to ask this as rhetorical. That's how I've seen it happen my whole life. And it seems when I bring these things up, people go, no, that's not it. And I'm like, well, I'm Latino. I grew up around a lot of Blacks. I'm like, why aren't people seeing that kind of – I view it as a common sense way of looking at it.
I think religion's another big component to that. I think you had, especially as the Democrats have gone so progressive and so anti-Christian with a lot of this stuff and pushing trans things, a lot, especially the first generation immigrants from Mexico or other countries who might be very devoutly Catholic. And all they want to do is they want to raise their families and be able to afford gas and have a job. And when they see the school, their kids are in the schools, and they start hearing the kids or start being told that girls can have, you know, things and boys don't have to have things, then they're saying, well, wait a minute. This does not jive with, like, our culture and the values we want to teach our kids. And so that's the bridge that they have to the Republicans, because the white part of the Republican Party, a lot of them have deep, you know, Protestant or Catholic conservative values. And so that's a bridge between these two different groups.
Well, I got to be honest. So here's something people don't realize. Well, I'm sure they realize, but maybe since you're born and bred California, you may not realize it. But there's a deep religious component to Black America in the South, the Baptists. And, you know, it's not as bad as how you see it on TV with all the singing and all that. They do that, but it's a rich, rich, vibrant tradition. Obama, because at first I used to always go, they'll never fully indoctrinate Black Americans as they tried saying, hey, it's white racism, it's a Republican Party, it's this or that, because of the strength of the church, especially in the South, where 60% of Americans still live. Well, lo and behold, Obama started going after the preachers, bribing them, bringing them on board. I saw a preacher, a Black preacher, and white preachers have done the same. But this is when I was like, oh my God, you know, if they crack that, we are truly screwed as a country. Where he was like, I had a dream. God said I needed a plane, and you must bring me that plane, my flock. I swear to God. I obviously changed.
Oh, one of those mega church people.
I don't even think it was mega church. I don't even think it was mega church. He just, you know, really, God sat there and said, you need your own private G, whatever they call those planes, you know? I don't think. But, and then there's another one called Pavlich or Pavlich. He's just a total racist bigot. And these are men of God. You know, men of God don't teach hate. They teach love, compassion, etc. So when I saw Obama going that route, it was brilliant on his part. On the Democrats' part, and it worried me. But it seems to have kind of leveled off. But you're right. The religion component is a component that's a given. But I think what you hit on best is the pocketbook focus. At the end of today, it wasn't even about religion as much as we have our own identity, our own brand, our own whatever. So at the end of the day, it's like, yeah. Like I said, hey, Sabado Higat, what's that? What, eggs are costly. What? How many chickens? What the hell's the matter with you, Beat Booty, whatever your name is? You know, that's what it boiled down to. Also, crime matters for us. We were never on board.
Lower income and certain neighborhoods are hit much harder by crime than the white suburban neighborhoods that vote blue.
Exactly. Okay, let's quickly wrap this up here with a couple more questions. So we talked about, you said the CAGOP has to. And I'm like, yeah, I know they have to, but can they? You didn't really answer that question, but let me dig in a little deeper with you, the pick at you there. Give me an example of what they would have to do to get Latinos. If you were their consultant being paid $800,000 a year for a half hour of work, what would you tell them in a half hour that they must do?
We have to bring the Hispanic community into the fold fully, like as equals. We can't just not – so the Democrats, they use blacks and they say, if you don't vote for Joe, you're not black. Oh, there's the white progressives on one pedestal, and then there's the black constituents, the voters who vote for them. We need to welcome the Hispanic community as equals, and we need to invite them into the tent and say, hey, we are going to be partners with you and represent you. And there are certain components, we talk about this and disagree, but I think there are certain components of the Republican Party which are still quite racist. And they, if they're going to be trying to say, we can't have Hispanics in the party, we can't do this, they need to be shunned, I'm sorry, because we need to welcome Hispanics into the fold, A, because it's the right thing to do, and B, because strategically we have to get the numbers.
You know, I will completely push back on that. There's a very small percentage of Republicans and conservatives that are racist. That's blown up by the media. There's it's a I have never ever experienced that in my life. I've talked to a lot of Latinos. I think that's a myth push, but you're right. They have to be shunned. I think the problem with it has nothing to do with color, more to do with just the way the party's structured, who gets involved in the party. You know, so for example, if I had a half hour, you need to go after the Hispanic 100, start to give them entry into the party, into power positions. I mean, you don't give them power positions, but you, hey, there's a potential a secretary one day. There's a potential this. Two, you got to go into the blue Latino districts. But that's not just it. You got to go into Compton, but you got to go into Barrio Logan. And when you go into Barrio Logan, you go in with somebody who speaks Spanish. I have flipped votes because I speak Spanish, because that person who doesn't speak Spanish, they have a perception that's not true of this one candidate versus the other candidate. So that's where I would start. It all starts with the ground game. And four, you can't sit there and pick a candidate because he has the most money or because he's loyal to King, whoever, fill in the blank there. You got to pick somebody who understands, who has the love, patronage, and support of the community, who's involved in the community. And five, you're talking about communities that are lower income. That guy who's well off, he may not have interest in politics, but there may be that young, charismatic person. So the Republican Party has a bad habit of, well, you have to bring this much money to the table. And it's like, dude, I got to sell my house if you want me to do that. You know? So those are, because Democrats, what I just described to you, Democrats do. You know, they do. And the reason I push back on the racism is, you look at any Latino household, Tyler, break bread with them. You're going to find out, yes, holy mackerel, they have their own shades of brown that goes from white to black, you know, because Americans have stereotyped Latinos into being brown, short and brown. The problem is that's what most of us may look like, but we actually run the whole gamut. Why? Those Spaniards, man, they were like rabbits when they conquered the world. So they mixed in a lot of white. Then there's a lot of Chinese. I have Asian. I have white. And I have black in my bloodline. You know? So anyway, let's wrap this up here with to the audience. Latinos are set to be 15% of U.S. voters by 2030. That may sound like not a lot.
And they're going to be a majority in California within a few decades, I think. In terms of the overall state numbers, they're going to exceed the number of white Californians within decades.
That's right. All those whiteys going to be going, S-A. That's my favorite word. I've stolen from the Mexicans. I never heard the word until I met a Mexican. As a Puerto Rican, I had it. But Sabado Gigante transcends all cultures. For those who don't know, Sabado Gigante used to be a variety show that was worldwide famous. Beautiful women, you know, it was based from the 70s, but it was just popular. Okay, so Latinos are flipping the script, Tyler. You know, they've gone partisan, you know. In terms of like telling Democrats, we don't like what you're doing. Hey, Republicans, we're leaning towards you, but we don't like this neither. They teamed up with the GOP caucus, the Latinos that have been elected. So we have our own caucus, which should grow. God bless female power. It's two females who did it. So this could shake up U.S. politics, because a lot of times, not as much now, Tyler, but that California high-ranking politician would always be seen as a candidate for those 50 electoral votes. We're still a generation away from that, but I think we're on the right track. Any final comments before we move on, brother?
No, I think we covered it.
Outstanding. Well, let's move on to another minority, one that's not liked by anybody.
You're just trying to get me in trouble today, William.
Delete and retreat. Karen Bass's vanity act leaves L.A. burning. So, Mayor Karen Bass's crisis leadership is under fire. What else is new? She just reiterates, she was in Ghana on a diplomatic trip when the Palisades fire broke out, killed dozens, torched homes, burned over 40,000 altogether when you leave the Palisades area as well. She had the red flag warning she's accused of ignoring, which she did, because any rocket scientist knows, based off the last 20 years, how this works. She knew it and has been playing dumb. And that has sparked a recall push fueled by claims of negligence. And it's worse. It's gotten worse, Tyler. Her phone's supposedly auto-deleted text. I guess if you have somebody doing this, not looking, that's auto-deleting, you know? But she's lost a lot of text by LA's own governance. You got to keep that stuff for 2 years. But there's a little state law that says you really don't have to. And she's hiding behind that. The recall is in place. 330,000 signatures are needed in 120 days. Your thoughts on that before we move on to the meat of it?
Well, when you talked about the text, my first thought is, what is with Democrats and trying to hide things on servers? Texts, emails, what are these texts? Benghazi texts, I don't know. But yeah.
30,000.
That's 30, a lot 000. Of texts.
You know, so I think the bottom line is the recall, I think, just underscores a perceived failure to lead. You know,
perceived, it is a, I mean, it is a failure. There's a clear failure of leadership.
That is true. That is true. Now, opponents are going to be leveraging her absence. That's the rallying cry. She wasn't here. She knew she should have been here. The budget. And now I think these taxes, it just it undermines her completely. So my point is we don't know what's in those taxes. So we think the worst. She goes, no. They just be harmless taxes, my friends. You know? And, but the catch 22 is she's damned. If she does, she's damned if she don't. She's damned if she shows those texts because we know she's deleting them. But if she doesn't show them and they are truly deleted, we'll get to that in a second. We can use her opponents can say, well, that's because she deleted them or we can't find them because they probably had this, this, and this. And the more you state that, the more it becomes believable. Do you agree with me? She's kind of in a no-win situation. And I don't know what she should have done. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, she's totally in a no-win situation here. If she actually has something incriminating in those texts, then she wouldn't want to share them. But if she ends up not sharing them, then they're going to say, well, what was in your text? Why aren't you sharing it? So she's – and her opponents are going to use this exactly like you said.
Well, I would.
As they should.
Again, so it's a no-win for her. Again, it's a 1981 state opinion, which I assume came out through some legal ramifications that says they don't have to save it.
That's her little state loophole, is what you're talking about there, right?
Yes, and while legally that may supersede the LA governance, as a Los Angelinos, you're representing Los Angelinos. I would, as a strategist, it would be easy to convince them. Don't you think that? Since she's representing you, Mr. Los Angelinos, and the city, that who cares what the state, she should have honored the Los Angeles will of the people. I mean, it's so easy to turn it that way that I think she may be doomed here. Now, let's get the fire chief fired.
Well, and this is in contrast with other officials, and they've released records from the fire's early days.
That's right.
But now she's not doing it. It's a total kind of, if other people are doing this with no problems, why isn't she? It totally confuses things there.
Because she is Karen Boss, man. I mean, it's like I tell my friends once a week when I bring this up, I go, who am I? I'm Karen Bass, not answering the question that they asked for me. So let's get to the fire.
Yeah, I wonder if this recall, we're going to reel her in this time. Or is she going to break loose again? I don't know.
I think she's toast. So she fired Kristen Crowley. Kristen Crowley screaming budget issues and how she sent people home. And Karen Bass says you should never have sent those 1,000 people home. Everybody who knows politics knows that's a complete lie. She kind of had no choice but to send them home because there was no money to pay them. Had she paid them, Karen Bass would have probably fired her for that alone. And so there's no data on who Los Angelinos blame in terms of Crowley or Bass, but I think it can easily be swayed to look at it. Hey, you're the top boss. You're the one who cut the budget. You may have fired her for sending the people home, but you're the reason she had to send them home. So again, there's no data on who favors it. What I got out of it is most of them are more than likely to look at Bass more unfavorably than Crowley. Your thoughts?
Well, Bass is the one in the spotlight now And if our attention's turning towards her, she's ultimately the one who the buck stops at her. All right? Your fire chief ultimately reports to her. So you can't, a good leader is not supposed to blame their subordinates. For the ultimate failure is at their feet.
Exactly.
The leader's feet.
So, for the audience, I looked into this because my first thought is, well, why don't you just go to the phone company? Well, the truth of the matter is the phone company only keeps actual texts, like for a few days, a couple weeks, maybe a couple months. And what they keep are like the timestamps, when the call was made, who the call was made to, et cetera, stuff like that. So they may still be able to catch something with a subpoena. And I think they need to produce a subpoena ASAP because she may still be deleting texts at this moment as we speak. Damn, Tyler. Damn, William. Delete, delete, delete. You know? But here's my question to you is, I think it would be smart strategy to go after who? Every one of her associates she was in contact with. I guarantee you not all of them are deleting. They're not even thinking about it until they're told to. And even then, I'll get to it, boss. I'll get to it. Boom, they don't. I think that's the only avenue they have to pursue in trying to recover the text. Now, if she's smart, here's what I'm telling them. Delete this text, this text, this text. Leave these. That way she looks innocent. You know, so how do you think, if you were in Karen Bass's camp, if you were in the opponent's camp and Karen Bass's camp with this deleting text, what would you tell them to do?
Well, Karen's probably going to try and tell them, just like you said, but good luck organizing that. Who knows how many different people she sent incriminating texts to. And the chances of you getting every single person to delete exactly what you wanted and none of them getting caught by the media or going to some whistleblower outlet, it's going to be a really hard thing for her to pull off here.
I actually would disagree only because she's probably just a little inner circle, talking to a few key people in terms of that flight back into Ghana. Now, the text that you're referring to may be the before she left. What was she saying about all this beforehand, before she went to Ghana? But the text there, I think it's just to a small circle. Yes, I would. If I was a consultant for Karen Bass, I would tell her, as a consultant, assign this to somebody, even if you have to round up the phones, to delete every email. If I'm telling that to her opponents, you subpoena, you target, find out who she may or may not have been talking to, then you subpoena their phones. Because the odds of them, it's human nature, laziness, of them having deleted everything is not going to be there. There's going to be something there. So who is, are you aware, do you know who is funding this recall? Who is behind it?
Nicole Shanahan. She's at it again.
And you probably know a bit more about her than I do. Tell us about Nicole.
Well, so Nicole was with the Make America Healthy Again, RFK campaign. She was the second-hand lady, or second in charge with RFK. She was going to be his VP. And then he joined the Trump campaign, and she stepped out and was still supporting RFK, though, with this movement.
Right. Okay, she's a billionaire. What I found, do you know what she does for a
living? That's important too. Is she's got a oodles of money to make things happen. That's the
right. And I did not know this, and I'll be honest, it kind of drops her a notch in my eyes. She became a billionaire because of a divorce settlement through Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google. But she sounds like a very sharp woman. And to the audience, I haven't done the research on who she is, but I've heard her speak. I've heard her talk, her passion. So she's a strong woman there. But I just kind of assume she made her own billions there. But according to my research, and I hope I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. But that she got it from her divorce. I'm like, that. You know, to me, I'm like, who the hell is your lawyer? You know? But maybe she was. Maybe she helped with the Google work there. Who knows? With Google. I'm not sure. So I want to tell the audience, there was a recall of Gascon twice that failed, and obviously the recall, I want to say twice also for Newsom, that failed. The problem with the Republicans is the Gascon recall was co-opted by rich elitist spouses involved in the CAGOP, and I mean it that way, exactly how I said it. They didn't care about recalling Gascon. They wanted to do something. They wanted to give the cause. So what do? They hire an outside consultant to come in, do all the signature gathering. There was contract work. They were lazy. They didn't care. a large number, I want to say 15% or so, were rejected, thrown out as false. Two, the grassroots that does the bulk of that for free or at lower cost, they ran off. So they utterly failed. When it came to the Newsom recall,
and this is your constant criticism of the party, right? It's, again, turning away from the grassroots, the people on the ground, and going towards the financed class and hiring out help, which ultimately doesn't work.
Exactly, exactly. And if the Republican Party leadership, which would fight the Democrat Party as much as they fight conservatives to wipe them out. One reason we've lost, Tyler, we don't no longer have a ground game. And they have literally ostracized and done everything to destroy the grassroots. Now, here's how life works in politics. Your grassroots is your heart and blood and the soul of the party in terms of your foundation, your infrastructure, getting the vote out, getting all that stuff out. Everybody else is on the rah-rah, or they're the money people, because you need money to do all that. So when you lose one of those components, you fail. Why do conservatives fail? They don't have the rich component, the money component. You know, they've got the grassroots enthusiasm and ambition, but they don't have that. Why is the CAGOP failing? One big reason is they've lost the foundation of their infrastructure and had a campaign. To the audience, you may not know this, but the state party came out in the right around 2008, 9, 10, right around there, says they're going to rely more on technology. And they gave up the grassroots. Right about then is we were arguably, there may have been another county ahead of us, the deepest red county. Once we went to the technology sector and abandoned the grassroots and the ground campaign and the precinct campaigns, all that, we slowly started becoming purple. And then when it was all gone, it completely evaporated and we exponentially lost. This is now a deep blue county. And the reason I say that is I know that. I asked, and I was told that specifically. And to finalize that point, I was told that it is not the Republican Party's job to go into blue districts. It is the campaign's job to go into blue districts. The party's only job is to bring every registered Republican voter to the polls. And I'm like, well, that's a losing end sum. There is no – I mean, that's a loser. There's not enough Republicans registered. Not to mention there's Republicans who are disgusted with the way the party is. They're not going to go. So why not work with the campaign to go into the blue districts? Instead, here's the other caveat. A good chunk of the money people donate to the party at the local level goes to the state. You know, so there comes a point I think the counties need to break off from the state, not formally, but say, – I get it. You want money for state level? I need to get my board of supervisors. I need to get my school board. I need to get my city council people elected, period, end of story. That would cause chaos early on, but that's how you would start to take the state back.
And so I'm going to push back a little bit against this. So I was at some recent meetings with the San Diego GOP, and what they were saying made sense. Let's take, for example, the John McCain race that we have here.
Right.
So what they were saying is that if John McCain's team – is spending time outreaching to Republican solid red voters, that's a waste of their time because it should be the GOP which is getting those red voters to the polls so that John McCain and his team can take his time to focus on the blue districts and blue voters.
Oh, no, I get that. Now, Tyler, simple question. Can you fart and chew gum at the same time?
You can.
Yeah, but you see my point? They can do both at the same time. You're right. That is a responsibility, but they can also work and help. You see what I'm saying? See, that's the black and white bullshit. And I don't want to curse. I told my producer, but that's just nothing but a BS answer. You know, there's 10 zillion analogies. I just love that one. Can you fart and chew gum at the same time? Yes, you can. So there's no excuse for them not to be able to do both. You know, so to me, it's not a pushback. Is, yeah, I agree with you. But then if that's all they can do, then we need a new chair. We need new leaders in that Republican Party because you can do both. You know, I mean, one simple solution that I don't see happen a lot, I'm sure it's happened, but it's not the norm, is if you got a board of supervisor and a city council, board of supervisor or district, and there's areas where they cross. Better example is a state race and the city council, or state race and the board of supervisors, because board of supervisors, you know, those are separate areas, city and what board. But if you get a state and either or, as a chair, I need you two campaign managers to sit your asses down. y'all across in a lot of districts, you need to work together now. End of story. I don't care about if you don't like each other. I don't care about what I just care about my candidate. You're in the same damn district, and that saves us money, saves us time, and you're building and working with the Republican Party. So this pushback, if this is my only job, no. You know, that's like saying, well, my wife's job is just to breed and have kids. That's all she's good for. She can only do one thing at a time. You know, no. People are multidextrous. They can do more than one thing. So you'll find that out when you run in a big race. What? You're not going to help me?
I found that out at small races, actually. So talking about assembly, working with board of supervisors, well, let's think even at a smaller level. City council working with school board, because it's all in the same city and these districts overlap. There was a certain school board candidate, and I'm not going to name who, that I reached out repeatedly in my race for Carlsbad. I said, hey, let's work together. Let's work together. And it wasn't Jen Belknap. Jen Belknap helped me a lot. But there was another one, and I kept reaching out. We had a lot of overlapping territory, and it was crickets. And why? Why was it crickets?
Because it was you. That's where the party go, hey, Mr. Other Candidate over there, get your ass in here. Well, I don't really have time. Really? I don't have time to write that fundraising check or to make sure you're endorsed or to make sure you're on the mailer. Do you get my drip essay? You know? And if that part of the, see, you may not have the power, but the party does, and they fail to exercise. They're cowards. They're on their knees for other people. They don't care about you, and you're the most important person they should be caring about. Instead, they care about, oh, man, I got to keep my job or I'm going to move up the chain again. What's up? That's how you get out of those guys. Yeah. All right. So Nicole Shanahan is actually a Silicon lawyer, so she's done well for herself. All right. Let me close this out. Any final comments? Oh, and my whole point on that is we are so unorganized as Republicans, whereas Nicole Shanahan is formerly a Democrat. Those Democrats, if they have anything together, it's the damn ground game. And her as a billionaire will probably fund this, oversee it, and make sure it gets done right. So if I had to put money on it, which I don't because I don't gamble because I have an addictive personality, I would put money on Nicole Shanahan recalling her. And I think everybody loves to hate somebody. And I think Karen Bass is toast. And, you know, maybe that was what she was thinking when she was like this. I'm toast. Yeah. All right.
She's grilled. Grilled fish.
So I apologize. Any final words on this topic before we move on?
No, I think she's going to get caught up in this net, and she's going to get beached on this whole shenanigans here. So see what happens.
Battle lines are drawn, brother. It's game on. Fastest knowledge on records, and her absence, her deleted text, the Crowley mess, all that screams avoidance and blame others. Legal or not, it's a torch trust. Hey, like that torch. Trust. It makes her the poster child for frustration by Los Angelinos. Her opponents are what? Fired up! Yeah, so they are going to go after her. It's all about keeping what? The heat on! I'll stop here. She's toast. So let us move on here to Newsom's podcast misadventures. A strategic pivot gone awry. You know, hold on one second here, Tyler. Okay, Tyler, so Gavin Newsom is kicked off. This is Gavin Newsom. And he just thought he could spar with Charlie Kirk and look tough. And that was a big mistake. He floundered. And the people out there, I'm talking about Gavin Newsom's first inaugural podcast of This is Gavin Newsom. He let Kirk run the show. And he was even asking for campaign tips. To me, he looked totally weak. Or not to me, but to some, he looked totally weak. And conservatives were laughing at it. They were saying it's a train wreck. It's tanking his cred with Dems. But I look at it as he's positioning himself for 2028. And so it's a double-edged sword. So I kind of look at it as he wanted to engage in civil debates. He wanted to bring MAGA people in. And he wants to start painting himself with a brush so he can run in 2028. What are your thoughts?
100%. I think if there's one thing the Democrats learned from the 2024 presidential race, they got to up their podcast game. They got to up it. You saw Kamala try at the last, and she, you know, she was going to get on Joe Rogan, and she did that other podcast with the $100,000 temporary studio. But Democrats are taking this way more seriously now. And as an example, Newsom doing this, this is proof that the Democrats are saying, we got to get our podcast game together. Because that was a big part of why Trump won.
Well, I'm not pushing back, but Democrats are pushing back. Some of them were pissed off that he abandoned them.
Hated it because of his turn on the transgender stuff.
Yes.
Because he knows that that does not play well to national ears, the hyper-progressive stance.
Right, and I think he was talking about women in sports was one of them. And then he criticized Kamala when talking about transgender, the what do they call it, transitioning and paying for it through prison. He criticized her. She didn't even say anything or push back, you know. However, does debating conservatives help him for future debates and political opponents? I think it does. I think it's, as we talked about off air, yeah, man, a year from now we're going to look back and cringe at these podcasts because we'll be so much more polished. I think that's what him bringing on MAGA people, conservative politicians, others, is doing nothing but sharpening him up, because I think DeSantis destroyed him at that debate, you know, because it's hard to fight truths with lies when there's nobody there to protect you when you spew those lies. And that's what the mainstream media has completely done in California. He's been coddled, protected. It's a deep blue state. He doesn't have to say the truth. He can just blame a Republican and the masses will believe it. So I think he's looking at this not only to help shape him as a moderate, but to help polish him up and tighten up his debate game. Your thoughts?
It's doing a lot for him. This was a train wreck, this first thing, sure. But he's going to get better, like you said. And another thing with this is that when Newsom speaks on a conservative podcast, he can speak directly to, let's say, a middle-of-the-road audience who might be watching this.
A Latino.
And that'll be directly his words to them, instead of filtered back through Fox News or some conservative media. He can speak to them. And whereas if it was taken through Fox News, they might spin this and try and make him look worse or something, because that's what the media does left and right. But he has a chance just to have that dialogue. So I think that's going to humanize him in a lot of people's minds. And if you're middle of the road, this sort of thing could, Newsom's not so bad. Certain people might say.
I agree, but let me push back a little bit from this perspective. He called defunding the police lunacy, Latinx. He dismissed that. Those were two policies he fervently pushed. So he may speak to the conservatives in the middle of the road, but I also think this isn't really who he is. He's trying to rebrand himself, so I think it's imperative upon conservatives to expose the truth with his actions. I find that so easy to do. You disarm somebody with showing the data, the actual actions in layman terms. So am I right that he's trying to rebrand himself? I think you'll say yes, but are we able to deflect his lie that he's going to be spewing on these podcasts?
We're going to have to be persistent about it. Look at Kamala. She almost rebranded herself within a couple months' time. Kamala was one of the most progressive politicians out there, literally raised by a communist college professor, a self-professed Marxist.
Yes.
And she was a Marxist, and everything she did was far left. And as soon as she was tapped on the shoulder to replace Sleepy Joe, well, all of a sudden she's a moderate, and everything she's ever done before isn't really her, and now she's this moderate position.
What does
Newsom have?
Newsom
has 3 years. He's going to be able to change the public perception.
See, I just don't think he will be able to, only because there's not just a 1 or 2 years. There's years of him being able to be countered. But what separates him from Horizontal Harris is the fact that Newsom is charismatic, he's likable, good-looking. What hurts him is he's waspish, so opponents can use that to look at, hey, Black America, man, they keep saying they want to help you, but they keep bringing in these white dudes, you know? Now, to me, I don't care, but that's a campaign tactic to use, you know? So I think it's incumbent on us. I think he can be easily destroyed, but he will go from, to me, a 2 or 3 as an opponent today to a 6 or 7 is somebody to be feared if we don't watch our backs. So real quick before we close this out, to the audience. So everybody's like, hey, Newsom's starting next podcast. We all act as if that's new. Not true. As San Francisco mayor, he hosted the Mayor's Hour It was a weekly AM radio show that ran for 1 year. He was lieutenant governor. No, 1 year, and then as lieutenant governor, so that transition. The Gavin Newsom Show on Current TV, the cable show, cable network that Al Gore owned that he sold. Remember, these are all green people, but Al Gore sold it to Al Jazeera, oil people. You know, it was the Mayor's Hour. It was a high-profile interview show. Then as governor, politicking with Marshawn Lynch, 8 months, that's going, but it's very infrequent now. And then finally, this is Gavin Newsom, 2 weeks so far. My point is he hasn't been able – he has polished himself. He has been quick-witted, but he's been so protected that once he faced the conservatives, he would get destroyed. Again, I'm just reiterating a point, but I think this podcast and the conservatives can help polish him. Final words on this before we close it out, on his history. Anything of note to that? Do you think it's helped him along to become the charismatic, polished guy he is? And do you think this final podcast or this current podcast is his next step towards global domination?
Yeah, I think this could be his next step towards global domination, or, I don't know, stealing all the hair gel he's going to just have for himself all one day. Yeah, he's going to get better. We'll see. It's going to be really interesting to see him. He's going to have some complete failures along the way, though, because he's out of the Democrat mainstream media little nest. He's now in the big thunderdome of conservative dialogue. So we're going to have some great moments of him just completely losing it, but he's going to get better. So
All right. So Newsom's not waking up, people. Remember that. He's just playing dress up. He's tossing Trump compliments around and deportation tough talk. You know, I mean, he thinks he's John Fetterman right now using that style. But don't buy it. He's a California liberal doing what they do at the Comic-Con, cosplaying for 2028. He's banking on us ignoring his woke resume. And that resume is so woke and so deep, it's like 5 pages. You know, and these are fake tears he's now talking about. And the podcast disaster with Charlie Kirk schooling them on transgender sports, that wasn't a misstep. That's a real Gavin Newsom not knowing how to react today. But eventually he will, and it will be up to us conservatives to expose him. He's not going right. He's just awful at acting right now. He's flailing to seem electable while tripping over the same old shtick. But watch it, folks, because he's a quick learner. So we better be on our toes. Okay, everybody, this is our Cali Blitz. It's our lightning round. We go 1 to 2 minutes. I bring up the topic. I bring up a question. Tyler gives his thoughts. I give my thoughts. If it's pretty deep, we'll give 1 or 2 more thoughts, and then we move on, people. You better be quick here, Mr. Tyler Collins. Cali Blitz number one. Kamala Harris is reportedly weighing a 2026 run for California governor, a decision critics see as a fallback cushioned by her name recognition rather than having a clear vision. She thinks she can win this race is what it boils off to. What does she need to do real quick, Tyler, to win?
Well, she says she's consulting her inner circle, but I think she's really just consulting the wine bottle. But she's got to fix her word salads. That's number one. I don't know.
No, that's true. Logic would dictate that she would do that. But I got to be honest, Tyler, with the way the CAGOP runs these state level and governor campaigns, I think the state is so blue that her name recognition may win out. I hope I'm wrong, but that's one. That's statistically, I see how it goes down. The CAGOP has a shot if they put up a conservative candidate who goes into deep blue districts and is able to rally Latinos in their home districts. Your thoughts before we move on.
That's what has to happen. The GOP really has to get its act together because you're right. She is just going to rest on her laurels of her name recognition, which very well could carry over to the top.
Do you think this is our best chance at the governorship since Schwarzenegger?
Well, logic would dictate that. I mean, obviously we won't be running against an incumbent, so that's always a plus. But the numbers speak for themselves.
True, true. We are deep blue. All right, Cali Blitz number two. A proposed state audit of the California Healthy Youth Act, which is sexual education courses, aims to track compliance and opt-out rates, stirring fears of privacy invasion and state overreach. The problem here is they're asking for an audit, And that looks great on paper, Tyler, but I think it's a potential Trojan horse, not today, but tomorrow, because the next thing they're going to ask for is who is opting out, because we need to contact and talk to those individuals. And for the sexual courses, they want to push because the suit is being brought, or recommendations being brought, by an LGBT organization, or the state legislature is backed by an LGBT organization. It really deals with sexualized courses on homosexuality, transgenderism. It aims more to indoctrinate impressionable minds than actually teach sex ed. And what I just said, people, that's documented fact that has happened, not conjecture. So I think they're asking for the numbers right now. Tomorrow they're going to ask for the family names. Your thoughts, am I right or wrong on this?
Yeah, that's a dangerous path. If they can see who is opting in and who is opting out, I wonder if that happens the way you say it is, that we're going to have eventually some equal protection suit, because you might be able to say that's political discrimination. You could have some other sort of protected class and say that these students who opted out are being treated differently than the ones who opted in. And so I don't know. We'll see what happens. But
that's a good point. I have not stayed at a Holiday Inn recently, so I can't give you my legal discourse. Cali Blitz number 3, Fresno's $12 million racism rodeo. Fresno Unified's $12 million program to boost Black student academics has sparked accusations of racial favoritism and a lawsuit claiming it violates sexual equal protection laws. Now, what this is talking about is they're saying, hey, you don't get a pass here just because you're Black. There are poor Latinos in the same boat. There are poor whites in the same boat, that schools should not be segregating this like this, that you can help them all out at once. And by not helping others out and only focusing on one culture, that is blatant discrimination. My take is schools, doesn't matter. Schools want to churn out indoctrinated drones. So I would question what's being taught in that course anyway. But we need to be teaching STEAM, and I agree with this lawsuit merely to get all Californians who are struggling into that program. Your thoughts?
It's just insane to me that the progressive stance now is pro-segregation. Like, why? This is just, it's gone off the rails. But no, we should be focusing on STEAM, and regardless of your skin color, ethnicity, you should have the opportunity to take these classes.
Exactly, exactly. And STEAM stands for science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. A lot of people hear the term STEM. We love the Californians, we love to toss in the arts. Cali Blitz number 4. This was a good one. California councilwoman's husband arrested by ICE sparks immigration debate. So the ICE arrest of Coachella, is that how you say it, Tyler? Coachella?
Coachella. Coachella? I haven't been to Coachella in a long time, but I think that's how you say the name.
So the ICE arrest of Coachella councilwoman Yadira Perez's husband, a Mexican national with a criminal pass, has ignited debate over immigration enforcement and sanctuary state tensions. So my point here, Tyler, is simple. Just because somebody's been here for 20 years, if they're here illegally, they're here illegally. It's not relevant. And the fact he has a criminal record he's never had to answer for also justifies actions on this. Democrats have been historically lenient on immigration, whereas conservatives tend to want to follow the law. The reason this has become an issue to the audience was Roe versus Wade. Over 30 million African-American babies have been killed. They want an influx of illegals to eventually make them citizens to fill in their new voting block. That's my personal take. But getting back to this topic, I think that this is a product, Tyler, of us not coming to the table to work with Democrats, because Democrats want every illegal free, whether they're rapists, murderers, thieves, or whatnot, and they have forced the public into a corner to where now the public is now saying over 80% or 70%, just get them all out if they're illegal. Your thoughts?
Well, so there's two parts to it. There's the part about should we deport illegal immigrants, especially those with criminal backgrounds. And yes, if you're not in the country legally, it doesn't matter how many years you've been here. Especially if you have a criminal history, you should be deported. Now, the second part to this, and the reason it's in the news, is because this was Yadira Perez's husband, a Mexican national. And there's the question of whether this was political targeting due to her council role. And on that issue, I'm going to say that just like the Democrats went after Trump for everything because it was a political job, basically, is what they did. We shouldn't, the Republicans who now are the power should not be targeting Democrats using certain laws for political targeting. So we have to hold ourselves to a high standard. You know, Trump said we need to end the weaponization of the FBI. And that means we don't want ICE to be a tool of political targeting. So that's not a good thing.
My question to you, Tyler, is he illegal? Has he broken the law?
Yeah, send him out with like a regular search.
That's it.
They going after him specifically?
One, it's not relevant. It's a talking point. Two, we'll never know. They want to make it a talking point. But at the end of the day, did he break the law and does he have a criminal record? Yes, he does. They can prove, this guy's supposed to be deported. My issue is this guy may not have to have been deported had Democrats been willing to come to the table. Let's figure out a way to get the bad guys, keep some of the good ones, etc. Instead, it was all or nothing, and they're losing. So she can make any claim. She has no way to prove it, you know, and that's the issue. So she wants to make it a talking point. It's like, feel bad for me, and let's go after those vile, evil supremacist Republicans, when at the end of the day, by law, they did everything by the book. You know, it becomes a he said, she said. All right. I think this is our final take of the night here. Key issues of the California Fast Food Council after 1 year. So 1 year in the California Fast Food Council has stalled on regulating worker conditions, fixating on wage hikes, and clashing labor and industry interests. So what this committee is supposed to do is better everything in the fast food industry, et cetera, et cetera. It's just more intrusion into the free market. So my take is simple here on this, Tyler, is this council does nothing but exemplify wasteful bureaucracy. They're draining tax dollars because, you know, there's some people getting paid on this, and they're achieving little beyond ignorant debates, likely serving as a grift for people who are on there, meaning, hey, I'm going to reward you. You're on this council. You're going to be paid this much. Markets should dictate wages and conditions through supply and demand, with regulation reserved for critical needs only. And pushing another minimum wage hike, Tyler, which is what is currently on one of the few dockets on their table. We saw that in Seattle a couple years ago. Businesses shut down. Yeah, I mean, they just closed out. In California, that will come. What's happening right now is thousands upon thousands of fast food workers are being let go. So this is what happens when you get government interference into capitalism. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I disagree with the minimum wage. You put floors or ceilings on prices, bad things happen. They have maybe good intentions, but it doesn't benefit the poor. It doesn't actually benefit these workers. So it's not a good thing. And like you said, this fast food council is a great grift for those people who happen to be paid to be on this. And it's interesting that they said they're still deliberating because of external factors like the LA wildfires. Give me a break. That was not the reason you weren't able to make any progress.
It kind of sounds like the councilwoman. Oh, it's because I'm a councilwoman you're targeting me. Really? You have no proof. You're just throwing something out there. So you said something very important. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. I don't even think that's true anymore. I think these are just flat-out grifts, some of these programs in there. Tyler, I will give you the final word on this since I jumped in with the despite good intentions. Any final takes on where you're going to get your hamburger, what it's going to cost because of the food council taking care of us?
Yeah, I just want reliable prices, and I want people to be able to seek employment. And if you raise the minimum wage, you're going to be cutting jobs at the end of the day. So,
yes, you are. And with that, my friends, there you have it. Another episode of Fired Up California. We managed to knock out Newsom, the Latinos, and the infamous Karen Bass. She's now infamous before nobody knew her. And we hope you enjoyed our hot takes from hamburgers to illegals, who now, according to Democrats, we lost another one who can flip our burgers. That's what bugs me, Tyler, is how they look at us as nothing good but cleaning your toilets, picking your fields, and flipping your burgers. Anyway, I'm digressing. Let me close this show out. Do not forget to like and share this podcast. This podcast, Fired Up California. You can find this podcast and others like it at grumleesmedia.com. Please bookmark that site. And you can also find us on YouTube, Rumble, Apple, Spotify, and Pandora under the handle Grumblings Media. I am William Del Pilar for Tyler Collins, and this is Fired Up California. And until next week, we bid you adieu.